This week's podcast is sponsored by the Embroiderers Guild of America and Avlia Folk Embroidery. Becoming an EGA member will open doors to a whole new world of needlework projects and techniques. Join today through your local guild or as a member at large, and consider a holiday gift of a membership to your favorite stitching companion. At egausa.org, be sure to check out a new slideshow for members called Moose Hair and Beads, a look at Native American embroidery. It's a fascinating study of the stunning art created by Native Americans. And that's just one of several slideshows offered on the EGA site. There are several new online classes starting soon, and don't forget that the number of seats for the very popular virtual lectures will be increased dramatically in 2023, giving more people a chance to enjoy these terrific presentations. Consider joining the EGA at egausa.org today. You'll be glad you did. Also sponsoring this week's show is Avlia Folk Embroidery at avliaembroidery.com. In November, designer Krista West is having her annual thank you sale. The code THANKYOU22, that's thank you and the number 22, will get you 20% off of Avlia offerings site-wide. This is a tremendous opportunity to purchase some of the popular classic designs such as Mediterranean floral, Pelopuli, and the Salerno tile bit kit. It's also a chance to save on Krista's very popular new cushion designs and the new embroidery designs, especially Mira Medallion and the stunning Athenia Palmette kit. Keep in mind that if you buy a kit, you receive everything you need to do the project, including the new beach hoops, which are excellent for holding your project while you stitch and for displaying after you're finished. Don't miss the big November thank you sale at avliaembroidery.com. And now on to our show with Cecilia and Kiana from the School of Needlework for Disobedient Women. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week, from the School of Needlework for Disobedient Women, we have Cecilia Roden. Cecilia, welcome.
Hello.
And Kiana Majub. Kiana, welcome.
Hi.
All right. Now, this title alone, the name of the school alone, you know, all kinds of things come to mind here, so... but this is just one of the neatest programs that I've heard of for using needlework. So all right, let's just start with, where does the School of Needlework for Disobedient Women, where's that come from?
We kind of wanted people to see that name and be taken back a little bit.
Well played.
We kind of wanted people to stop and be like, wait, what is this?
Because, we were going for attention grabbing.
Honestly, yeah. And it fits, though, because the history of needlework and the history of women are one thing. And, you know, you've taught women skills to manage a household, and then they use them to embroider stories and stitch suffrage banners and do things for themselves, which was frowned upon. So the name fits historically.
Yes. Yeah, there's plenty of stories about banners and everything else. Yes. Yeah, plenty of them. So that, all right. So the name works. It gets the attention. No question about that. But now I want to learn what you guys do needlework wise, but let's talk about this whole program that you've put together to help young ladies. And where did this come from? How does it materialize? And just tell us a little bit about it.
So this actually came up back in 2019. Cecilia and I attended a workshop for grant writing for Arts Meets Activism with the Kentucky Foundation for Women. And after some talking and brainstorming, we decided we really wanted to bring something to our community that could give back to it and give to an area that usually does not get much attention in our town.
Yeah, teen girls are probably the most underserved of the youth demographic. There was really nothing for them. You know, there's team sports and scouts, but if somebody is not more of a physically active person, they're completely left out. And we've always found that the one, you know, joining factor of everybody who's not into sports loves art. Everybody can participate.
And tell a little bit about the town. What do we have for demographics, and what are we serving? What kind of community are we serving here?
Well, I always like to ask people, what do you know about Berea?
Okay, absolutely nothing. So,
Okay, cool. Starting from the beginning. So, Berea, Kentucky was designed around Berea College. It was the first interracial coeducational college in the South during a very segregated era. And it now exists to bring in students who are in poverty or marginalized in any way, and they receive a free education. They receive work experience in this historic college. And so the town didn't exist until the school made it exist. So that's history of the town. As of today, it's still quite small, about 15,000 people. It's still 91% white, and our poverty rate is just over 20%.
Okay, so you have a perfect audience then in terms of helping people out.
Absolutely, and it's the arts and crafts capital of Kentucky.
Oh well, there we go. Now, how are you ladies affiliated with the school, or?
I'm an alumni.
And then I actually just grew up here in Berea. So Cecilia graduated a couple years back, and then I've been here for over 20 years. So we both have different ties to our town.
Yeah, okay. So we do a little brainstorming, and we say, hey, we need to help some people.
Yeah.
We need to help some people, and we need to learn how to be artists who are able to pay themselves. We wanted to not only make a career of it, but lead by example to young girls that you can make a career of it, that you don't have to, you know,
have a conventional job,
or they don't see a whole lot here in terms of examples of successful women. It's, you've got your teachers, you've got your nurses, and that's no shade towards anybody. Those are very important. But when that's all that they see, they're not getting a good picture of all of the opportunities available to them. And nobody's teaching them that sometimes you have to make your own opportunities.
Yeah, I think we probably could stand a little more of that kind of education. Yeah. How does Needle, so art is going to be the common denominator. How does it become art in the form of needlework?
It's cheap and it's accessible, and it is something that probably every girl who comes and walks through the doors can trace back to someone they know really well in their family, someone they look up to. It's unifying and accessible, which is very important. You know, you've got, what, $5-6 of investment, and you can make so many things.
As opposed to a palette full of painting oils and canvases, yes. So did you start out by defining, because you're serving 12 to 17-year-old teen girls, You got a university there. What makes you go with high school age as opposed to college?
In our community, this is the age range that there's really not much left for them to do. Summer camps around here typically go to about 11 years old, and then everything else is for college students if you don't have a high school-related activity. So this is truly trying to give something to an age range that just does not have much opportunity in our town, and give them a safe place to come meet like-minded people.
Where the adults supervising them are not necessarily authority figures. It's probably the only place they get a whole lot of that.
And we do invite older girls, like college students and such, to participate. We have not had many yet, but down the line, we hope to have them join us as fellow teachers and get to be a part and serve as role models for the younger girls as well.
Did you work through the high school to develop this, or did you just put it together and put it out on the board and see what happened?
No, we've both worked in the high schools around here, but which gave us an idea of what was accessible to them and what was not. But this was not affiliated with the schools in any way.
We did contract with teachers from the local high schools on a you know, a 1099 independent contractor basis to consult with our curriculum, but that is not really an official affiliation with the school. It was us one, you know, looking and saying, okay, we've got budget for this. How do we give back to people we also know are underpaid, but are perfect to consult on this work? So we found art teachers to, you know, instead of paying a consultant for their time, we paid a teacher who has experience with the kids in this community that we would be seeing.
Okay, that makes good sense there. Yeah, and of course they can help you identify students who'd be interested, without a doubt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So tell about how you tell about the brainstorming. How do you come up with this idea?
I think first we sat down. We were like, "What art mediums do we both do?"
Yeah, Cecilia and I are both artists in several different ways, but embroidery was the one thing that we both were pretty fluent in.
And we kind of started doing it around the same time.
Yeah, so we had about the same level of experience. And we both have a very different style, but which is pretty unique to bring to when teaching it.
So then, all right, that gives you a common denominator then. So then the next step is to figure out how can we apply this and help people.
Right. It's a very easy to, once you know your stitches, sit and stitch and talk to people and build community and build connections. It's not like an intense activity like a sport or a club with an agenda. Really, you've learned the skill and you're practicing it among people who are like you. And, you know, we're bringing kids from almost four different schools plus homeschool together who may not have ever met each other. And a lot of what happens in public schools is, you know, sit down, shut up. This is not for socializing. And we wanted to give kids an opportunity to actually act their age and without, you know, because I understand that schools, you know, they have deadlines to follow and they have curriculum that they have to meet, but we don't. So there's no reason for us to try and force them into a very intense, focused setting when we can spread it out over 2 weeks and make it comfortable for them and allow them to work at a pace that they're happy with. If some girls don't even finish the project, that's fine as long as they leave with the tools to do so.
Yeah, this it intrigues me on several fronts, but a former high school teacher here many years ago now, but also in a small, very rural community where what you're describing is very much what I experienced as a teacher. A lot of boys and girls with little to do. If they weren't working on a farm, they had a lot of idle time. And so I relate to the audience you're working with, and so basically we're using needlework as a glue to bring these young ladies together to help them interact and basically discuss this life's problems and life's issues.
And we're also reaching even more specifically. A significant demographic of those girls are girls who them and their parents are not affiliated with the church, which limits their options for socializing even more.
Yeah.
It's a mixed bag. We have, you know, girls who are and are not in church, but a lot of those girls who are not affiliated with a religious institution
don't have groups to confide into and relate to and meet new friends with.
They feel very isolated in a town where that is considered the standard, the norm, the default.
And what we've really found with our workshops, especially this year, is these girls did continue being friends afterwards, and they were not friends before. So that was pretty awesome to witness.
So you helped them develop a community then?
Absolutely. I mean, we had girls who they had very uncomfortable, tumultuous home lives that they have to cope with for a few more years. And they've now met friends who maybe they can go spend the weekend somewhere else and get a little bit of a break every once in a while. Whereas those girls before, they didn't go to the same school, so they may never have met each other.
Yeah. Yeah. That home life. Yeah. That's any teacher can tell you. How critical that is, and how it affects kids in ways that are not always seen. Yes.
Just because it's not hitting an illegal level doesn't mean it's not still harming them in some way that they need time away. Like anybody, we all need time away from our families.
Right, right. So, what is the program? What is the program that you put together?
So the School of Needlework for Disobedient Women is a needlework series of workshops, 10 days over the span of 2 weeks. But needlework is more of the, like, the unifying factor that everybody's doing. But the real content is social issues, self-expression, activism, what's important to you, your community, your age range, what are your values, who are you, questions that a lot of girls probably are not being asked until college. Given them the opportunity to figure out who they are in a new setting that isn't influenced by authority, like the school, their parents, or their church peers.
Mm-hmm. So basically, you guys bring them together and then effectively get out of the way?
Pretty much. We'll give, like, guiding questions, and sometimes they'll have more questions for us, like...
Yeah.
Early on, some of our, like, we do daily questions in the first hour. So it's like a 4 hour day. The first hour, we give each small group a critical thought question, like, where do you get your news from? You know, where do you find your entertainment? Do these people have your best interests at mind? What's the goal? Follow the money? Questions like that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll hit us back with questions we hadn't even thought about, like, regarding body image or cancel culture, and it'll shift that way. We're currently working with consultants to try and figure out how to help them take that content and put it into their art.
Do we have a project that everyone does, or needle and thread and start sticking needles into ground cloth and see what happens?
We don't even stitch till probably the third class.
Yeah, we start the first few days off. We did a lot of just really personal digging. Like, we created boxes that they did a collage on, and they used images that they related to or just were simply their aesthetic, whatever they wanted to use to define themselves. And that got to be their personal toolkit. So that was a group activity. We start every day off with critical thinking questions, like CC said, and those take up some time. And then
we did needle books for a day, and we also had them make needle minders, little magnetic needle minders. So we kind of gradually went up from, like, your basic craft, and we added a little bit more needlework every day. So we went from making your toolkit, your collage box, to making your needle minder, which you're not touching a needle and thread for, to moving to making your needle book. So now you're sewing a little, but you're not really doing many embroidery stitches. And then from there, they did a stitch sampler, which we designed based on our logo. And then after that, we went into designing our own things. And that second, like the majority of that second week, was working on their own unique designs.
So they lead up with a lot of getting to create these personalized items that they get to keep and continue creating with. And then they really get to learn, like, as a group. And we actually found a lot of girls, or at least a couple of them, already knew embroidery pretty well.
Yeah.
Able to even show the girls how to stitch certain things, which was really just great.
That's what we wanted. Is for we'd show them how to do it, and then, you know, because it's so one-on-one, you're going to have girls who are really quick and girls who take a little longer. So those girls who are really quick can help the other ones while we get certain things prepared or caught up. So we're there and we're guiding, but they're really the ones doing it.
So the needlework allows them to connect and gives you another channel of interaction then.
It keeps their hands busy, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It keeps them off their phones. Not that I really have a problem with that either, but it's, you know.
There's a lot in that. There's a lot in that. Off the phones, yeah,
it's helping them engage with each other, because, I mean, I can't focus on anything if I'm not doing something with my hands. I mean, every time I'm doing something at work that mostly involves me being a body in a room, I am doing embroidery while I am that body in a room.
Yeah.
It's many people will do knitting or something else to keep their hands busy when they can. So we just want to provide them with something that they can not only express themselves with, but just can be doing with.
Really showing what it was before phones, too. You know, people have always been doing something with their hands. So here's another option for you. Because I've always found it funny when people are like, oh, kids and their phones, they just don't want to communicate with each other. It's like, yeah, you know, historically we were sitting on the train reading a newspaper, reading a book, finding other ways to ignore each other.
Yep. Yep. There's our new line of demarcation, before phones and after phones. Okay.
I like that.
Yeah. So how do you market this as a needlework program or as a social gathering program?
Both.
Yeah, both.
The way we market towards parents and the way we market towards teens are actually a little bit different, too. So
we're trying to catch the interest of the teens, but also the parents to show, like, hey, here's an opportunity for your kids to come do something different. But we want to show the kids that it's not something boring.
Right. Like, we might give parents the parent advertisement a little bit more content about, like, the critical thought discussions and the historical discussions and feminism and activism. And we'll imply that a little more in our advertisements for the teen girls by maybe using images that represent those things that they might relate to instead of trying to pound buzzwords into their head.
Yeah. So you did a pilot program. That was your testing ground. How did that go? What did you learn from that?
Yeah, year one. So we learned a lot. We learned what really was important to teach, and we learned that we gave ourselves 1 week, and it was certainly not enough time.
Not even a whole week. It was 4 days.
Yeah, and every single one of our students that year left a comment at the end of the week saying, we need this to be longer. So. We took that to heart, and we made it 2 weeks longer and added a lot more projects for them to do and learn.
A lot of the things that we ended up doing are things we wanted to do in the pilot but could not squeeze into 4 days. Mm-hmm. So we've got this 4-day program designed that we can use if maybe we have to, you know, travel and do a short session or have another reason to teach it that doesn't require 2 weeks, but we've got this long program that is going to be our official curriculum design.
Yeah.
All right. So if I sign up for this program, do I go to a school? Where do I go to participate?
So we actually host the series at Rebel Studio and Lounge in Berea, Kentucky. We actually chose it really specifically too. So we could have probably gotten a free venue at the library or the extension office, but we don't want girls to feel like they're in school. We don't want them to, we don't do kiddie crafts either. We want them to feel grown up because that is what teenagers want. And so we rented this space that's run by two self-made women. So we're providing girls even more examples of successful women. It's also a music venue in the evenings. So these girls have started coming to those events too. It's getting them out of their house. It might be worth saying it's actually the only actual music venue that's consistent in town right now. So it is the gathering place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's helped girls and it's helped their parents connect better with their community. And it's gorgeous. And they just want to take pictures with each other in it. And they just feel comfortable.
I love that you're not hauling them back to school for one more thing.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. We were looking at potential spaces and we were like thinking the library or the extension office because they'd be free or very cheap. And I'm like, I don't want to be in a white room with fluorescent lights and an ancient tile floor, linoleum floor that you can't clean it because it's just that color now. Like, I want to not feel like I'm in school. There's a reason I don't work in schools anymore.
No, that's a smart move there. That's good. Yeah, get these young ladies someplace where they can let their hair down, so to speak, and just be kids. Yes.
I mean, and once again, it's taking something that we have budget for and making sure that money goes to community members that support us that really need that business.
we want to give back to as many community members as we can, kids, adults, everyone. Everyone very valuable, and these are the folks that want to give back to their community when they can too. So
they're the ones that have helped us get started.
Yeah.
They've kind of been just watching them helped us learn how to interact with our community. And if you can't find a way to, you know, make money creatively, then you make a way to make money creatively. You know, they were very inspiring. So we want to give back. They're, you know, working on their dream too.
Mm-hmm. We have a good venue. I assume that the people at Rebel were cooperative in terms of price and time and all those things to make it possible for you to do this.
Absolutely. They actually gave us 50% in-kind donation on that.
Excellent. Yeah. And then who else did you have helping you make this happen?
Shannon Downey from Badass Cross Stitch gave us a $500 micro grant and 10 hours of consultation. And it has been the most helpful in learning how to get that age group engaged in very difficult discussion topics.
And then obviously the majority of our income for this comes from the Kentucky Foundation for Women with their Arts Meets Activism grants.
And then Berea Kids Eat paid for a meal for every kid and instructor every day for 2 weeks. And that meal was provided by nearby local businesses. So both Peganol Pub and Native Bagel Company.
Also women-owned businesses.
Also women-owned businesses. That way, you know, Berea Kids Eat has decent USDA funding, so they're trying to give back to the community in the same way we are by putting that money into people's businesses who need it.
Boy, that's excellent. You really have tied a lot of people in that community. That's excellent.
It's what we do here. Like, if I could pick a defining trait of Berea, that is it.
Yeah, this community takes care of each other.
Oh, that's kind of heartwarming, quite frankly. That's great. Yeah. Yep. So what was the feedback other than longer with the pilot program?
They wanted to do stitch samplers.
Yeah, well, they wanted to do a more with their stitch samplers, we had just told them to create whatever they wanted. We did not give them an official design during that pilot program, and they actually did not like that freedom. So we did learn where certain restrictions were appropriate, and we gave them an official design to do, and then they really got to actually show their creativity with that because each one looked different. They all personalized it in their own way, but they all still got to learn the foundational stitches together.
We didn't do the stitch sampler the first year. Actually, that was going to be the workshop, was to pre-make a design to be a stitch sampler. And feedback from Kentucky Foundation for Women actually wanted us to encourage them to do their own designs, which I wholeheartedly agree with. We just did not have that time in 4 days. So the fact that we were able to double our time and do both just made the whole experience so much more fun and less frustrating on their end.
When you get to the 2 week program, then that then frees you up time to teach some stitches and get these ladies going, and you've got a stitch sampler, but then also time for them to do their own creative work.
Exactly, and having that extra time also leaves buffer space for things just getting off topic and out of hand because it's a room full of teenage girls and that's going to happen.
We literally had some live singing happening at several points.
Like they had set up the night before that venue so that open mic could come in that Tuesday without having to set up, and the girls, like,
they loved having a mic in their hand.
Okay. No, that's great. So there's enough freedom in this program that you can just go down a completely unrelated path and just let the girls be girls then.
Yeah, there's lots of wormholes of getting off track and having fun, but still all end up creating tons of fun stuff. And
even those who don't finish, like I said, we have enough supplies to send them home with. If they get the skills, they can take as much stuff as they need to home to do that. We encourage it. We want to leave every year with no supplies left.
Okay. And the supplies are from Badass Cross Stitch then? That's
no, these our supplies coverage or costs are covered by the Kentucky Foundation for Women grant.
As well as a small micro grant from the Stay Project, which is a organization that tries to encourage building your community in Appalachia to be a place that people want to stay. So jumping off, people tend to graduate and they want to move somewhere more left, more liberal, more safe feeling to them. Mm-hmm. But the idea is that if we all leave those spaces never get any better. So that is their mission. And they give members up to $200 for projects. They are a youth-led organization. Once you hit 30, you age out as a member.
Mm-hmm.
So they helped us with the cost of supplies that exceeded our original budget.
Oh, excellent.
Also, when you tell people that you do embroidery, you get all kinds of, my grandma died, this church lady died, do you want all of this needlework stuff? And I would say that's where the majority of the thread and fabric probably came from.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of that out there. We support a program in Madagascar. Women who basically have built a business with needle and thread, creating products that helps them put food on the table and get their kids some education, and just putting out the word that we need some floss and some ground cloth and some needles. And yeah, there's a lot of stash out there that can be tapped into, and all quality stuff that you can put to use. Exactly.
There's so much abundance. And yep. Overconsumption caused the abundance, but I'll take it anytime.
Well, you guys are needleworkers, so you know about overconsumption. Yes, why not? Yep, buy that stash. All right, so we have a successful second 2-week program. You learn from that. Now, what are your plans? Are you formalizing this program, as in you could send me a PDF file that lays it all out? Are you planning to do future ones? How does this go forward now?
Yeah, we're working our way there. Of course, we, takes a lot of groundwork. We still have a long way to go with those things.
Takes a lot of money.
But yep. we are slowly but surely making our way there. We hope to share this program with so many other communities. And
we actually just wrote a grant that we do not know if we've gotten yet. But in order to turn this into maybe a once a week after school program, not necessarily, it's obviously for the kids, but it's also to help us become better at what we do, how to refine our curriculum. Because if we're only seeing them once a year, we have no way to know how to improve it. And it's going to just keep taking longer and longer. So if we can get the funding that we need for that, we'll be able to hopefully release some kind of pilot program sign up sheet at the end of next year for other communities to pilot it, test it out, see how they can adapt it to their community, and then give us feedback so we can improve it again and kind of keep working towards making it the best it can be. There's no guides out there for how to do a subversive curriculum. It's just us.
Yeah. Do you see this as a school year program or a summer program or year round?
I mean, hopefully both in the end. Currently, it is just a summer program. We host it in about the middle of July. And what we would like to see it turn into is an after school type program. We, again, want to give to this area of kids who don't have somewhere to go if they don't have, cheerleading practice or, some sort of sport-related thing after school to do. They need somewhere to go that isn't going to lead to, something worse down the line. We want to give them a space where they can come create, come meet like-minded people. And
I mean, I grew up in a city and we had those kind of things.
This
community doesn't. And all that's different is where these girls happen to be born.
No, that last community I taught in, I tell you, you're just taking me back to that very thing, because once the guys have been selected for the basketball team and the 8 cheerleaders have been selected, all right, now what? Yeah, there's a whole bunch of other young ladies who are just sitting there with very little to offer. Yep.
Yeah, and sadly, our schools around here really don't have the funds to offer after school programs. like art clubs and other type things for kids to do. And if they do, they usually only meet like once a month. So yeah.
If it's not done by the schools, it's usually quite expensive. I mean, even $20 a week could be very expensive for some families. I know that when I was that age, I couldn't have afforded to pay for some kind of art camp, art club, or after school thing.
Well, and that's the other thing that you're addressing that bothers me greatly is long ago when it was decided that home ec and shop and, you know, much art didn't belong in the curriculum. We need to teach reading, writing, arithmetic. And taking that out of the school is such a mistake because there's so many students who can find their own path to adulthood and success through something other than math and science. And you guys are at least providing some way for them to connect with the arts, and that's terrific.
Well, and in a way, it's taking out the arts, specifically in reference to embroidery, it's kind of a devaluing of women's work, quote unquote. So you can learn reading, writing, and arithmetic through embroidery. That's yes. What stitch samplers were. They were to learn your letters, to form a sentence, counting in needlepoint and cross stitch, taught you math and geometry. So these are valuable core skills. We just teach them in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And reinforce too. That's an excellent reinforcement of what they get in schools. So. Okay, now we've got an audience of a lot of needleworkers and a lot of needleworkers who are part of Embroiderer Guild of America chapters and American Needlepoint Guild chapters and so on and so forth, many of them looking to do some outreach. Is this a program that might get transferred over and made available so that those groups can use it for outreach?
We hope so.
Yeah, we would love to be able to license it out maybe on a sliding scale to organizations that have the budget for that kind of thing to help keep us going. That would be awesome. We're about to take on partnership with First Friday Berea so that we are going to become a project of First Friday Berea so that this can live on beyond us. We're going to hit a point where we're no longer relevant to teenage girls. So we want to make sure we build this in a way that it can be
carried on
mm-hmm. and by others. You know, I don't know about you, but every time I get something, I love getting things perfect and then I don't want to do them anymore sometimes. Yeah. So it's, you step back at a certain point, maybe you've done this for 10 years and now you're just going to be a consultant.
Yeah.
Now you're going to start a new project and let that one grow wings and fly and get this other one started and repeat.
What would be great is if girls who have participated this in the beginning 10 years from now could take this program over and continue giving back to our community and reaching these needs that do not get met. And I mean, we would love to see it come full circle like that one day.
Absolutely. Yeah. We've talked about if we could find the funding, maybe having paid interns, like girls who have been with us before, apply to have an internship as like a needlework, you know, facilitator, School of Needlework facilitator. It's just that we haven't quite found that our girls are ready for that yet. We're hoping that it's more of an issue on our end getting them to that point. And as we improve, we'll start seeing, you know, girls who maybe are ready to take on an internship under us.
Mm-hmm. And continue to have repeats. We did actually have a repeat from our pilot program. We almost had two, but she actually got her first job as a babysitter, and of course we would never want to interfere with that, but we do hope to get some repeat girls and see them continue to fill this role that CC is mentioning, and again find the funding to do so. So
we believe in paying people for their art and paying people for their work, even if they are still learning.
Yeah. Feedback from community leaders on this, or
I think
early?
Everyone likes what we're doing. Everyone believes that teenagers are important and we have to take care of the kids however we can. And
we got a really sweet letter from one of the moms too. She said that, you know, her daughter has just kind of become very reclusive and depressed through COVID, and it just lit her up after leaving the workshop. She's now showing up at community events and having sleepovers with some of the girls. So it's kind of brought them back out of their shell.
Yeah, that COVID thing, that's another factor that, yeah, I'm sure that there's a lot of impact there. I've often wondered, well, I what teachers have gone through the whole pandemic thing, but the kids, you know, learning is one thing, but then there's the other social aspects that I don't think we've yet seen the full impact on kids' social development. And that's, yeah, there's going to be some work to be done there.
Imagine being 12, 13 years old in 2020 when everything shut down. And that's like the most important years of really learning how to interact with people.
Yep.
I mean, there's a lot that leads up to it, but you can get away with a whole lot more social faux pas when you're younger. But you hit that early teenage, and that's kind of how you figure out how to be a person.
Right.
And they weren't getting that. They were doing all of that virtually. And I think it was really difficult for them to reassimilate back into, you know, person-to-person contact. And a lot of them shut down.
Yeah. Yeah, it's this pandemic, there's going to be several years now where we're going to learn about what it did beyond just the disease part. And I'm going to have to correct a lot of it. Yep. It's going to be interesting. Well, ladies, this is quite a program. Congratulations on your work so far, and boy, really looking forward to seeing what you do with this. And I'm sure that as you get things moving forward, that you'll find plenty of help in the needlework community in terms of spreading the word and getting this implemented in other communities. This is really, really terrific. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for taking an interest in it.
Yeah, thanks for wanting to talk to us about it and letting us spread the word of what we're trying to do here in our little town.
All right, and thanks to everyone for listening.